Republican, whose K-12 initiative works to empower families with quality school choices. WaltonK12.org.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte likes to flirt with jazz, and every once in a while, jazz festivals will crop up. We have one that starts this weekend, and it isn't new. It's the fourth annual Uptown Jazz Festival, and we'll find out more about it, the artists appearing there, and share some of the music you'll hear later in the program. First, we concentrate on one of the most visited sites in America, one of the most stunning, a place that hosts historic locations and cultural treasures. To top it off, it's a road, the Blue Ridge Parkway. Over 14 million people visit the area around the North Carolina portion of the parkway each year, and since it's within driving distance, we're going to make you a bit more acquainted with what that scenic artery has to offer. Carolyn Ward is CEO of the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation. She joins us in our Spirit Square studio along with Willa Coffey May, the Chief Development Officer for the Foundation, and Aaron Marshall, who is Music Program Manager of the Blue Ridge Music Center, which is part of the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation. Welcome to you all. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning. I thought that the Blue Ridge Parkway was a federal road with some state influence in the states through which it passes. So what is the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation?
The Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation is the nonprofit partner to the parkway. Our primary function is philanthropy. We do good for the parkway. So we do that in lots of ways. And as many people probably know, a lot of the budgetary economic issues facing a lot of our parks today are increasingly challenging, and the role of the foundation is to try to help bridge that gap in funding. So we fund lots of projects and programs up and down the entire 469 miles of the parkway to do those things.
So not just North Carolina.
Not just North Carolina, and we fund projects that otherwise would not be able to take place. So, for example, we built a communications center. We had rangers out on the parkway unable to communicate with each other because of the poor infrastructure. So we gave about $220,000 to help build that communications center, making it a state-of-the-art place and safer for our visitors. We've built bathrooms. We do education programs. The music center is one of the things that we've taken on this year. So this year alone, we've contributed about $700,000 to the Blue Ridge Parkway to help enable those projects to happen.
And where does that money come from?
It comes from folks out there listening. It comes from donors across Virginia, North Carolina. We have grants. We have lots of individuals that help support the parkway. Most of our money comes from the license plates. Those specialty Blue Ridge Parkway plates.
Let's talk about that for a second, because it's at one point, I'm not sure where this stands today, but at one point the legislature wanted to make those special license plates, those full license plates, which were for the Blue Ridge Parkway, and sometimes it's for down the beaches down east and other special interests. They wanted to make them uniform, which would essentially neuter their effectiveness. Where does that stand today? Were you able to change their minds in Raleigh?
We were not. HB 289 was passed in 2011, and if we don't have some sort of change from the legislature in 2015, everyone out there that has a specialty plate will have to turn it into DMV and get one of those standard first-in-flight plates.
And why would they do that?
Why would the legislature do it?
Why do they do anything? No, what was their reasoning?
I'm not sure. The rationale that we were given was bound in safety and readability. Mm-hmm. And the legislature that was passed, HB 289, also called for a study to be done mm-hmm. to decide if we really needed to do away with them or not. Mm-hmm. But the study determined that we did not, that the white box, the readability of the plate, our plates are 7 times higher than federal standards. And so they said, you know what, you can keep the specialty plate program. And what we need now is the legislature to go back and make the law consistent with the results of their own study.
This is very puzzling to me. The bill called for a study to be conducted. They conducted the study. The study negated the need for the bill. The bill passed anyway, or the bill had already passed?
The bill passed with the section in it requiring the study.
So what was the point of the study? If they didn't negate the bill, if it just they did the study and the study came up with its findings and on we go happily ever after. What was the point?
Well, I think the original intent was to pass a bill that had some sort of clause in it to protect the citizens of North Carolina, right? Safety. We don't want people out there driving with plates that can't be read.
Right.
But golly gee, maybe we better study it and make sure that we really do need to get rid of them before we really do it, because the bill did not require the 2015 was the close date. So they said, let's do a study.
So whoever said you get the government you deserve in a democracy was right. How much money does the Parkway get from these plates?
We get about $600,000 a year. And in fact, from the beginning, since we've had our license tag, we've given about $1.7 million to the state of North Carolina and $3.9 million to the Blue Ridge Parkway.
And this may end in 2015.
Because it will end in 2015.
It will end in 2015. So the Parkway came along, if I'm not mistaken, in the mid-1930s. Is that right?
That's correct.
When did you come about? When did the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation come into existence?
The foundation started in 1997, and it was to try to help meet those needs that were otherwise not being met by federal dollars.
And so how do you interface with both the state and with the National Park Service and the federal government?
The foundation really serves as a linkage. We help bring communities together. We help bring citizens together into their park. So often folks have very specific interests. You may love education or you may love cultural heritage and you want to help make a difference for Mabry Mill or for the viaduct. So you can give your money to us. We'll work with the Park Service to help make sure that your intent is met, because the Parkway has no end of needs. And so we can help match the needs of a donor to the needs that the Parkway has.
Where does this begin? I grew up in Virginia, and on certain Sundays we would take my grandmother riding on the Parkway for a Sunday afternoon. And that was my exposure to the Blue Ridge Parkway, and I've ridden on portions of it here in North Carolina. But where does it begin and where does it end?
The Blue Ridge Parkway starts in Shenandoah National Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mile zero, and it goes all the way down to milepost 469, which ends in Great Smoky Mountain National Park. So the Parkway itself originally was designed as a connector to bring those two parks, Shenandoah National Park and Great Smoky Mountains National Park, together.
And for people who have never experienced the Blue Ridge Parkway, don't know where it is, don't know how to get on it, if you're coming from Charlotte, if you're new to the area, where's the best access point? What would you suggest people do to experience it?
If you're coming from Charlotte, I would probably get on 77 North, mm-hmm, and head up, and you could probably get off at 89 and head up and hop onto the Parkway, or you could all go all the way to the top of Fancy Gap Mountain and get on there as well. And then if you headed south, you would come to the Blue Ridge Music Center. And if you head north, you'll go to Mabry Mill.
And the Blue Ridge Music Center is where?
Milepost 213 on the Blue Ridge Parkway, just 10 miles from Galax, Virginia, and 20 miles from Mount Airy, North Carolina. And a lot of people don't realize that the Music Center is built on three counties, three very musical counties that are famous historically for the beginnings of old time and bluegrass music. And it was built strategically where they all come together, Carroll and Grayson counties in Virginia and Surrey County in North Carolina.
Boy, your tax issues must be extreme. people think of the Blue Ridge Parkway as being a road because, quite frankly, it is. But it is also the most visited national park in the country. Is that because people are simply passing through, or are they actually stopping and getting off and enjoying the scenic overlooks and some of the other offerings like the music center that the Parkway has in its proximity?
The 14 million visitors are visitors to the Parkway. If you include the traffic, the commuter traffic, mm-hmm, it's about 17 million. And so the 14 million people are coming to experience the Blue Ridge Parkway, and they come from all over the world.
But the Parkway is actually a park. It can be a pretty narrow park in some places because the right-of-way is what? 800 feet in either direction of the actual roadway in some places?
It can be in some places, and in some places it expands to the size of a large state park. And so we often refer to the Blue Ridge Parkway as a string of pearls. And so you'll have this string that goes along, and then you'll have these big open areas of essentially what in many places would be a state park.
And there are no entrance fees, unlike many national parks.
That is correct.
Anywhere along the parkway?
That is correct. And that's one of our issues, given that we have more visitors than Yellowstone, Yosemite, and the Grand Canyon combined, and we manage that park at a fraction of the budget of any one of those places, and we have no entrance fees, you can begin to see the challenges that management would have. Right now, there's 37% of the positions on the Blue Ridge Parkway vacant and cannot be filled because of lack of budget support.
And is that a federal problem or is that a state problem?
It's a federal problem. It's a national park, so it's funded by the Department of Interior.
Okay. Aaron, you're with the Music Center, and we just mentioned there were no entrance fees, but surely you charge for performances.
Well, actually, you can come to the Music Center 7 days a week through October 27th this year and hear free live music as part of our Midday Mountain Music programs that happen in our breezeway. People sit in rockers and enjoy themselves listening to local traditional musicians playing old-time music, bluegrass, gospel. And those programs run from 12 to 4 p.m. every day. We also have the free Roots of American Music Museum, still a very new museum. It was designed by the same fabricators as the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. It's completely state-of-the-art. Lots of activities for children, fully interactive, rare artifacts and videos and ways to experience, not only read about, the culture and music of the Blue Ridge.
This is one of the missions of the foundation. It's not just to give money to keep the roadway and the park open and nice. It's to preserve the traditions of the area through which the roadway passes. It is to preserve the ecology of the area. I would think that's a particular challenge. It's a road. And the cars, the more people who come through in their automobiles, the more they're contributing to air pollution, which contributes to acid rain, which contributes to the defoliation of the forests. How do you fight that battle? That's a tough one.
Well, you know, they've talked about national parks being loved to death, and this is not a new issue. It happened way back when the first roads went to the edge of the Grand Canyon. And so this is not really a new issue, but with the Blue Ridge Parkway, it's exceptionally challenging, considering, as you said, it is a road. But for us, it's much more than a road. It really is a journey. It's a memory. It's a piece of people's history. And it's our park. This is our national park. It's in our backyard. It belongs to us. All our national parks belong to us, but this one is ours. It's in our backyard.
Meaning North Carolina.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, Mike, I would just add to that that when you just drive on the parkway, you notice what a different place you're in, a different world that you suddenly have entered. There are no commercial signs. There, you know, it's a peaceful experience when you go on the parkway, and people gain so much from being there. And yes, having cars going through the mountains does have some problems associated with it, but also we're protecting so much of that very delicate ecology that can be threatened by other things like development and overuse in other ways. So
we did a program on this a couple of years ago, Willa, and one of the challenges that I recall from that program was the fact that in areas the parkway is 1,600 feet wide,
right,
and you have this encroachment because it's become popular of commercial and residential development. So how do you either combat that, if that's the right word, or control it, or encourage people to be respectful of the park and the parkway?
Well, the Park Service works very diligently with all the adjacent landowners. And also, several years ago, the foundation published a guidebook for landowners, sort of a list of rules that or guidelines that if they adhere to, that it preserves the nature of the parkway.
And do they cooperate with that?
Most people try to. There's always a few outliers, but most people do try to, and I think it's a partnership, a real partnership.
Willa Coffey Mays is the Chief Development Officer of the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation. We're also with Carolyn Ward and Aaron Marshall, and we're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and South End Soul. Live music, craft beer, and food trucks 5 till 10 p.m. Saturday, Camden Road between South Tryon and Park Avenue. Details at historicsouthend.com. And the Isiola Lodge at Linville Golf Club, featuring local fresh cuisine, a Donald Ross Championship golf course, fly fishing, and spa located off the Blue Ridge Parkway. How about that? Information at isiola.com. Summer is a time of year when a lot of people leave their homes and set out on vacation. You might have an alarm system or maybe a neighbor who will keep an eye on things for you, but they can't watch your house all the time. And do alarm systems really deter burglars? What goes through the mind of a burglar? Why do they attack your home or target your home and not somebody else's, like the person next door? We are going to speak to a professor who actually sat down and talked with hundreds of burglars tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, open enrollment for health insurance through state exchanges begins October 1st. The push to get the systems up and running, and Americans signed up.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're talking about the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation. They are the people who help preserve and protect and encourage development of and cultural heritage encouragement along the Blue Ridge Parkway. Carolyn Ward is the CEO. Willa Coffey Mays is the Chief Development Officer. And Aaron Marshall is the Music Program Manager at the Blue Ridge Music Center. This is a nearly 500-mile national park, the most visited park in our system throughout the country. Passes through four national forests and crosses six major rivers, and you call this a living museum of history and culture. How so?
The Blue Ridge Parkway really captures the spirit of Appalachian Mountains and Appalachian culture and community. And I think that was a little bit about what we were talking about right before the break, about the fact that we don't own the vistas. When you travel the Blue Ridge Parkway, 90% of the people that come to see the mountains.
Right.
They come to see the views, the view sheds, which we don't own. They're owned by the communities and the neighbors. And the reason I think that what we're able to do is so good is because the neighbors who feel the $2.3 billion economic impact from the economic engine that is the parkway know and appreciate what the parkway means to their community, to their town. If it were not for that twisting ribbon of mountain road that brings some of those 14 million people into those little communities, there would be a pretty different face on a lot of these little mountain towns. And so what we do is try to help bring those things together and help preserve that. Our Kids in Parks program is an example of that.
Do the people who live along the parkway and the businesses who have located along the parkway, do they benefit from the tourist traffic? And as a result, are they respectful of what you're trying to provide?
I think so. We just finished one of our largest parkway-wide fundraisers, Plates for the Parkway, for example, where restaurants give a certain percentage of meals back to the foundation because they recognize, study after study shows, all of these folks that come. There's only a few places to eat along the parkway. There's nowhere to get gas, for example. There's a couple places to spend the night. And so if you're coming to the parkway for an experience, you've got to go into the local communities, and they certainly do see that.
Okay. As a museum, what can people see? It's a 500-mile-long museum. So what kinds of attractions do you have that people stop off and enjoy?
Oh, there's 14 visitor centers, I believe, along the Blue Ridge Parkway. There are over 600 different little buildings that have been preserved, cultural, historical, interpretive signage along the way. There's trails. The Blue Ridge Parkway has 2% of all of the trails in the entire national park system. And so there's a lot, 135, I think, different trails that can take you to different places, waterfalls,
So how do you, if you're traveling along the parkway, how do you, do you just stop the car and get out and walk the trail? What do you do? Seriously.
We encourage people to get out and experience the parkway.
Are there places to pull off and park?
Yes, there are many overlooks. There's 382 overlooks that you can pull out on the parkway, as well as all those trailheads we mentioned.
And they're not just places to get out of the car briefly and go, ah, look at that. There are places you can actually stop, park, walk away from the car, enjoy the trail, and come back in a couple of hours, really?
Absolutely. 134 trailheads from the parkway. And we have our kids' trails from the parkway, too, where we're trying to – the Blue Ridge Parkway, like all parks across the country, only 7 to 12% of the visitors that come to the parkway bring children. So we've gotten a future generation of stewards that's coming behind us to take care of some of our natural parks. And so we're building lots of opportunities to try to help not just get folks like you and I out, but young kids out experiencing the park.
Well, Milepost 213, that is where the Blue Ridge Music Center is. It's only 10 miles from Galax, Virginia, 20 miles from Mount Airy, home of Andy Griffith. on the Andy Griffith Show.
You bet.
You have a plethora of activities scheduled throughout every summer, and I guess it's year long, but we're in the summertime now. So this all began in May, and it continues through August.
That's right. We're actually open May through October. So actually, we even have events happening in October. But our main stage concert series, we talked about the free museum, and we talked about the free midday mountain music that happens daily. But we do also have a summer concert series, and that really starts to get going the end of May, Memorial Day weekend. We started with a big youth traditional fest, and it goes through until the end of August or early September. And those concert tickets are very affordable. They're usually about 40 or 50% cheaper than places around Galax. And, you know, for example, our holiday concert on July 6th, which will have a big family square dance and a couple wonderful string bands there, the ticket cost for that is only $5. And those concert tickets, which tend to range from free to $5 to $20 for Roseanne Cash, which we had last week, they help support all the free programming we have at the Music Center.
So the logical question would be, why make them so inexpensive?
Need the
money.
Well, you know, we really do want to reach a huge number of people. We want people to experience.
It's the Walmart theory. It's volume.
No, it's quality, too. And as the music program manager, I'll tell you that there's a lot. It's a lot more than just entertainment. We have educational programs. Our concerts have conceptual themes, and we're always tying to heritage themes in the Roots of American Museum and around us in the communities.
And you're not just a supporter of this music; you're a performer of this music. You brought your fiddle.
I did happen to bring my fiddle.
I didn't call it a violin. Was that bad of me? It's a fiddle, right?
It's the same thing, though. It's a very popular question. So it's really just like speaking a different language. You know, it's the same instrument, like your voice box, but yeah. It's like speaking Spanish instead of English for a moment. It comes out a little different.
I take it, since it's sitting here on the desk, that it's your intent to play something?
Sure. I would love to demonstrate one of our local tunes and give people a taste of the music that they could enjoy, especially on that big Independence Day weekend that we're going to be having at the Music Center coming up.
Okay.
So this kind of music attracts a lot of flatfoot dancers. That's kind of step dance. And we put out big dance boards. People bring picnics. They sit on the slope and they enjoy the bands. But we're also going to have square dance. And so you got to have some good music to dance to. And this particular tune I'm going to play for you is considered the anthem of Surrey County. That's what all the traditional musicians call it. It's called Susanna Gal.
Okay, here we go. This is Aaron Marshall. Thank you. The anthem of Surrey County. You drew a crowd outside our window.
Yeah, we have people outside the windows. Thank you, clapping. I appreciate that.
I don't know how they can hear that, but I guess but I guess they can.
He's coming to the Music Center, I'm sure, for July 6th.
Now, as I understand it, the Blue Ridge Music Center is transitioning to your control beginning this year. You're taking it over from the National Council for the Traditional Arts. Is that correct? Why?
The National Council for Traditional Arts was very involved, as was the Blue Ridge Traditional Arts, with helping get the Music Center established, helping get the funding to build the exhibits that are currently in the Music Center. And they really wanted a more local group to take over the running of the Music Center day to day. And so for them, it was really their time to pull out. They see their role in a more national way. They do music programs all over the country. And so they really thought that it would be beneficial to have a local group to be able to form those relationships with local communities.
And Willa Coffey Mays, you're the director of development. I take it that means you're always looking for new things, different things, more ways to improve the Parkway.
Absolutely. What we're really looking for are people who love the Parkway and have an interest in making a difference. And we really connect people's hopes and dreams for the Parkway with reality and make them happen. So that's what we like to do. There's so many people in North Carolina who just love and adore the Parkway. In fact, I was looking at our state magazine recently, and UNC-TV was doing an ad, and they had a picture of the Blue Ridge Parkway as part of their ad. And everyone in North Carolina seems to identify with the Parkway. It belongs to us. We have a responsibility to take care of it and take care of it very well. I think people have a lot of pride in the Blue Ridge Parkway and in North Carolina. And I, for one, am very passionate about making sure that we pass that along to future generations and they have the same experiences that I've had as an individual.
National parks around the country have fallen on, I'm going to say hard times.
Absolutely hard times.
In recent years. Why?
Well, I think the federal budgets for national parks have continued to decrease over many, many years.
And everybody loves the parks. You hear this as a universal comment. I don't care whether you do this program here or you do it in Montana. If there's a national park nearby, people love it. So if there's people loving the parks, why is the government, we are the people, the government is the people, why is the government pulling back on supporting the parks?
Well, you're asking a really big question there, Mike. I mean, there's a lot of things that fit into that category, and I don't think we have enough time to really delve into that. But it's a question I ask myself all the time because I think it's one of the most important things for family health, for the economies of gateway communities. There's so many reasons to support the parks. It's always been a mystery to me why the federal government does not step up and take its responsibility to take care of the parks the way it should.
So how has the Blue Ridge Parkway suffered over the years because of this?
Well, Carolyn mentioned the fact that we have a lot of vacancies on right now, and we hire a lot of seasonal employees to do a lot of mowing and that sort of thing in the summer, so there's been a delay on that this year, and as we continually lose personnel, it's more difficult to keep up some of the historic structures that we have. And if you can just imagine, if you do have to close an historic building, then later when you try to reopen it, there's a lot more expense involved. So we're not always making the best decisions. I think, you know, like everything else, things, it seems like an easy place to cut, but we really need to consider what we're cutting out of our national experience when we cut our national parks. And it's such a tiny percentage of the national budget. That's the thing. You know, there's really no need to trim so heartily
there. Is there support among the North Carolina and the Virginia delegations in Congress to support at least the Blue Ridge Parkway? Or can they do that without throwing money at the entire park system?
You know, that's a great question, and we are often asked by our donors and folks that care a lot about the Parkway about the role of advocacy and talking with folks about those kinds of things. There is a very clear division between state and national, and so although we certainly have lots of congressional support from folks in North Carolina and in Virginia, it is the national scene that really makes the decisions that affect that federal budget. And so things like the sequester, I mean, if you think about how that all unrolled and how that's all developed over time, the ability for one individual or state or congressional district to have any control or influence on that is probably pretty minimal.
Joy on the web writes, I took one of my sons and his friend to the Blue Ridge Parkway campground on Price Lake a couple of weeks ago. We had a great time, but I noticed the campground was very run down. My mom used to drive me up to summer camp from Florida to Vermont via the Blue Ridge Parkway every summer, so I feel like I know every meadow and overlook. I would spend three or four nights camping and see black bears and eat pancakes at Mabry Mill. I was happy to find that moving to North Carolina put me close to the parkway. It's sad to see how run down things have become. I wouldn't like to think that the next generation misses out on camping in nice settings. It is good there. It is good that there is a foundation, but I'd like taxes to cover it. Alas, there is not enough money to go around. And I would think that her comment about conditions in the parkway could be extrapolated to other national parks around the country, right?
Yes, I would think that would be a fair statement.
Mohammed emails, thank you so much for highlighting such a gem in our backyard. Due to higher elevations of the parkway, winters can be harsh. How often is the parkway closed due to winter weather?
You know, that's a great question. And if you think about last year, we didn't have a lot of,
right.
a lot of winter weather, so there wasn't a lot of closure. We actually have a new program that we're about to launch. If you're familiar with Ray's Weather, we're going to launch BlueRidgeParkwayWeather.com in partnership with Ray. So we're going to have accessible cameras live on the parkway all up and down the length, so you can go on and check that weather to see whether or not you can access the parkway.
You also have cameras. You've helped install remote wildlife cameras, and you've put them in bear-proof cases. Do bears steal cameras? Do they have a use for cameras? How are these cameras used?
You know, the cameras have been one of the great investments we did. You often don't know what you don't know. And so when we put the wildlife cameras in the backcountry and watch some of the behavior of the bears and the deer, for example, we could see how fence lines were influencing migration, were influencing where they were eating and what they were doing and the behaviors they were having. And so it's led to some management changes and decisions. And so those cameras are used to help us better manage the wildlife that's along the parkway.
Are those cameras accessible on the web to average people, or is that simply for the park rangers and the park service?
Those are not accessible. They do have some images and still shots and little clips that they've put out for the public to see, but the line of video footage is not accessible.
You're also involved in a number of other projects, including Kids in Parks. What is that?
Kids in Parks is a program we started a few years ago. We actually received an award from the White House last year and have been endorsed by the American Academy of Pediatrics for that program. It's designed to do two things: get children unplugged and outside. They're plugged in for 8.64 hours
a
day.
A fight on your hands there.
We do have a fight on our hands. And to tackle childhood obesity and children's lack of connection to nature, we have over 50 trails already installed in 5 states. By the end of this year, we'll also be in California and South Carolina. And in a couple months, we'll be opening a track trail at the White House.
Really?
Yes.
Their grounds are big enough for that?
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to have a trail all along the outside of the White House where you can learn about some of the plants and animals found there.
Isn't that called Pennsylvania Avenue, Constitution Avenue?
Not like the parkway.
Not the same.
You're also refurbishing the trail systems at, I'm not familiar with this, Graveyard Fields. And also Hart Pond. Talk about that briefly, if you can.
Graveyard Fields is one of the most heavily impacted sites along the parkway. It receives lots of visitation. People come up there to go pick blueberries and to look at the waterfalls. The parking lot always overflows. There is no bathroom facility, so we are raising the money to build a bathroom, to expand the parking lot, and harden the trail, making it safer for the visitors and for the resource.
Monroe emails, we visited Craggy Gardens over the weekend in full bloom. Gorgeous. Thank you to your guests for keeping the park so glorious. And Rob emails from Burnsville, you asked about attractions along the parkway. Don't forget about Mount Mitchell, the highest peak east of the Mississippi River. How would you suggest people enjoy this park in 30 seconds? Or less.
I would say go to your closest access point, drive for 10 miles, pull off, and take a walk.
And if you want to know about all of the musical offerings this summer at the Blue Ridge Music Center, it's easy to do. Go to our website, wfae.org. We'll put it up on that. But you can also visit blueridgemusiccenter.org. Really easy to remember, blueridgemusiccenter.org.
That's right. And it's cooler, you know, in the summer. So come to our Krugers Brother concert this Saturday.
Thank
and
you
enjoy
all for
the
being
weather.
Here. That's out. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Hendrick Acura. Smart luxury car and SUV choices combined with personal customer service for new and pre-owned vehicles. Located on East Independence or online at HendrickAcura.com. Open enrollment for health insurance through state exchanges begins on October 1st. This is all part of the Health Care Act, the Obamacare Act, the push to get the systems up and running, and Americans signed up. The topic of the conversation at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. We're going to talk about jazz and the 4th annual Uptown Charlotte Jazz Festival when we come back. Stay with us.
No matter where you live, no matter how you spend your day, the experiences you have listening to Morning Edition, NPR's weekday news magazine, become a part of your life. Our correspondents circle the globe, meet people you'd never otherwise meet, and introduce them to you. It's like you're traveling with us. Come along on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, your source for the latest news, weekdays from 5 until 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. The 4th annual Uptown Jazz Festival gets underway at the Time Warner Cable Uptown Amphitheater tomorrow night and Saturday. Last year's event was nearly sold out, attracting true jazz enthusiasts from all over the Southeast. So we wanted to find out what this year's event holds for music lovers, and we've invited Tammy Green to tell us. She is a principal partner of the Uptown Jazz Festival. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
This is the 4th one. I didn't know there was a 1, 2, and 3. How did I miss that?
Actually, yeah, it's been 4 years. I actually remember the meeting. Charles Whitfield, a partner of mine in the Fest, we met at Fuel Pizza right on East Boulevard 5 years ago. And, you know, we looked up and it's like, wow, 4 years. But yes, we've been around for.
Has it always been at the Uptown Amphitheater?
Yes.
People may not know where that is because it's a relatively new facility. Where is that?
It's in the North Carolina Music Factory, right behind the Fillmore. So if you go out the back doors of the Fillmore, there's an outdoor amphitheater.
People may not know where the Fillmore is. How do you access this?
Okay, well, if you go straight out Graham Street. Mm-hmm. If you're going out, and I think is it the 4th Ward?
Yeah.
If you go straight out Graham Street, make a left, the Music Factory is there. So you have Wet Willie's there. And
it's really
like
an
that.
Amazing facility. It's a little awesome. Hidden gem out there because it's not just that. It's some nice restaurants surrounding it, and it's really a great place.
Yes, you have Osso there. You also have the Comedy Zone there.
Right.
There are just many, just great facilities there, yes.
So this all started at Fuel Pizza. I was going to ask you how this event started. Just a conversation, and it grew from there?
Well, actually, Charles and I met through a mutual friend who's an artist, because Charles was a music executive with a record label.
Uh-huh.
He was in California, and he decided to move back to the Carolinas. I guess five or six years ago. And as he transitioned back to the Carolinas, he said, hey, let's just meet together and talk about what's happening in Charlotte. And we met at Fuel Pizza, and he said, wow, you know, Charlotte needs a jazz fest. And I said, I think you're right, but I know I can't do it alone. And he said, well, let's kind of, you know, explore and do some research on it and see how we can make that happen.
How long have you been in town?
I've been in town since 1997. I moved here with the Vanguard Group, and so my background is finance, actually.
Because we've had some jazz festivals in the past. Some of them have been absolutely wonderful, with some great musicians coming into town and playing. And then they just kind of come and go. That's why I said Charlotte likes to flirt with jazz. This station used to play smooth jazz.
Yes.
We still do on our high-definition channel on WFAE HD2, and you can access that kind of music also on our website by clicking on HD2, WFAE's jazz channel. And I'm told that if you go online and you do ratings for online people who listen to jazz online, it's enormous. The numbers are enormous.
Oh, yes. Yes,
but
yes,
you don't hear this kind of music much on the radio. You don't hear it all on commercial radio.
This is true. You will find smooth and contemporary jazz now on the internet a lot. So I find a lot of the station and the music on internet, satellite radio, and of course people in their cars listen to it a lot now.
And occasionally jazz musicians will come to town. They'll play the Blumenthal, the various theaters at the Performing Arts Center.
Yes.
So what do you hear since it was almost sold out last year, and it was a weekend event, so it's several days, what do you hear from the people coming to your festival to enjoy the music about where they hear the music when they're not at the festival, which is the other 363 days of the year?
Yeah, well, actually, I hear, as a matter of fact, just the other day, one of the fans, they mentioned to me, they said, you know, thank you for bringing the fest to Charlotte, because now I don't have to board a plane, spend money to go to another city to hear contemporary jazz, the music that I love. But I also hear there's more consistency with jazz here and all types of jazz. So you have now your traditional jazz with the Beckler and the Jazz Arts Initiative doing more traditional jazz. But actually, we bring artists here throughout the year. So there's more consistency, and the people love the consistency, because if there's not consistency, they won't know where to find it.
Right.
And it gets a little choppy.
You're called the jazz diva, I am told. Why is that?
Actually, it's so funny. And it's an inch. I did not give myself that name. Actually, a radio personality gave me that name years ago when I started producing concerts. And she said, "You know, you're the jazz diva. That's what we'll call you, the jazz diva." And then many of the people who follow jazz just started calling me the jazz diva. And I'm like, "Wow, I guess it stuck." And so that's really the short of it. It really stuck. And when people see me, they say, "Oh, you're the jazz diva," but I don't sing or anything.
I want to talk about and play just a few of some of the people who will be playing at this weekend's Jazz Fest. And this year you've invited two of smooth jazz's biggest stars, Peter White and a guy named, well, he's not really named this, but he's chosen this name, Huge Groove, because he's kind of cooled up his name. His full name is Stephen Eugene Grove.
That's right.
This is Huge Groove. A song called Living Large. We'll hear a part of this and we'll talk about him. Person. He played with Tower of Power, the likes of Joe Cocker, the Eurythmics, Huey Lewis, Elton John, Bonnie Raitt, Aaron Neville, and many, many others. So this guy's no slouch. He's been around the block and played for a lot of major acts. And as a headliner, he's made his name in the world of smooth jazz. That kind of is that piece of music we just played says it all. It seems to me. Talk about smooth jazz as opposed to traditional jazz.
Well, smooth jazz, smooth and contemporary jazz, it is just the way it sounds. It's very smooth. If you listen to Huge, it's a groove where you kind of bop your head, you can relax, you can have a glass of wine, just as the same with traditional jazz, but has more of, again, a more modern feel to it.
It's kind of a moody thing, and because that's exactly what I think about. I think about a glass of Chardonnay and just having, you know, sitting in your pajamas almost and kicking back.
That's right. What I do is I sit on my patio and then I'll cut the internet on to find some smooth jazz and I just listen and I'll have a glass of wine.
So how does that translate to a weekend of performances at an amphitheater?
Well, actually, there are more people than you think that love smooth and contemporary jazz, because it, you know, there's always the argument of, wow, it's very different from your traditional jazz. But once people know it's here, you'd be surprised. I've gone to jazz festivals or more smooth jazz festivals where they've had 17,000 people.
And would you call this a smooth jazz festival? Are most of the performers performing at the 4th Annual Uptown Jazz Festival going to be smooth jazz performers?
I don't know if I'd say exactly smooth. There is a difference between the smooth and contemporary, I would think, just a slight difference. So I think we have a little of both.
I mean, is it difficult? I've been in radio for a very long time, and I used to be in music radio, and we learned very early on when music started to change dramatically that if you are a top 40, for instance, a top 40 music lover, you don't really want to have country music, even if it's the number one country song in the country, mixed in with that, and vice versa. So is it difficult to program smooth jazz and traditional jazz on the same bill?
I personally don't think so. I think there is room for both or all types of jazz. It really just depends on the artist, because many people, for instance, I'm a fan of music, period. I love the instrument. So if you're playing traditional, smooth, I appreciate the actual artist or musician and what they're playing and how they're playing the notes. So I think if you're a true music lover, you'll love it all. And I don't think it's difficult. It will take some planning, but I don't think it's difficult to plan.
You have also chosen to kick off the festival on Saturday with a musician by the name of Greg Karukas. He's from Washington, D.C.
Yes, he is. And what an awesome performer he is. He's a pianist, keyboardist. And there are some people who know Greg and some who don't, but he is a pleasant surprise. He came to Charlotte years ago, and I think what I call the sleeper hit of the summer, because everyone walked out with an impression of, wow, he was great. And he brings his band from Washington, D.C., and I think they all went to high school together and played together. And wow, what an amazing show.
Let's hear a little bit of Greg here. Peterson and Monty Alexander and Bill Evans and Thelonious Monk. I could go on, but I won't. Are they as prominent? Are pianists as prominent in the world of jazz or smooth jazz today as they were in the world of traditional jazz years ago?
Actually, they are. Brian Culberson, who is headlining tomorrow night, he's a pianist and keyboardist and a great one. Of course, you still have Joe Sample, Greg, Brian Simpson, who is the music director for Dave Koz. Another pianist who was just here 2 days ago. And yes, very prominent.
How do you choose the musicians, the performers who will be part of this?
Well, I first think of the entertainment factor. Can they entertain a big crowd? There are many musicians who are maybe good in the studio or great in the studio, but that may not translate to the stage. And so when you're talking about a festival, people want to be entertained in addition to listening to the music. So I think of the entertainment factor. I also think about who do some of the people want to see. So we take a survey and find out on Facebook, who would you like to see? Yeah.
You have a lot of followers?
Yeah.
And I know the economics of this is, I don't want to get deep into the economics of this, but it seems that you're taking a fairly big personal risk here when you book festivals like this, because you have how many performers are coming?
They're at least 6 to 7.
All right, so you've got 7 people on the hook that you got to pay.
Yes, you are so right.
and you've got to pay for the venue. What if nobody shows up?
Oh, gosh. That is the one thing that will keep you up at night. Oh, my gosh. So, and yes, when I, outside of the fest, when I produce my own shows, but I think it's just a matter of consistency, having that feeling and just knowing your audience. Mm-hmm. And I think we know our audience very well. We know that once they know the festival is here, they support year after year. No matter who's on the bill, they're going to come out.
And it was sold out, as I said, last year. I take it it grew from point zero in the first year. I'm not sure how many people showed up, but is it growing in audience size every year?
Yeah, actually our sales are up this year, and we're on our way this year again.
Who's coming? For people who know these artists, who have you got coming?
Okay, for locally here in Charlotte, Fifth and York, and some of you may know them from the Ritz-Carlton. They play there every week, so we're going to bring them on the stage to kick off the fest tomorrow night. Of course, guitarist Peter White from England, love him. He's such a great guy and great performer, huge groove. And closing the night on Friday is Brian Culberson, and his show is phenomenal because he plays trombone and plays the keyboard, and plays any other instrument on the stage, so it's a sight to see. Saturday night, we'll start the fest with Greg Karukas on piano, and after Greg, we have Paul Taylor, Marion Meadows, and Vincent Ngala. And the great thing about Vincent Ngala, he's a young guy. He's only 19, but he's really taken the smooth jazz industry by storm. He's out of Connecticut.
What's he play?
Saxophone.
There's a lot of saxophone in smooth jazz.
There is a lot of saxophone in smooth jazz.
What's that? Even the cut we played from Greg Karukas featured a saxophone, almost to the point of burying poor old Greg. What is it about sax and smooth jazz? Is it just the substitution of a single letter in the word sax?
Right. You know, many fans.
That'll make you think.
That might have went over my head for a second, but I'm right with you. Actually, many fans love the saxophone. So it's very popular instrument. I even hear some of the artists and musicians say, you know, everyone loved the sax player back when I was in high school. But when I played upright bass, no one ever paid attention to me. So I think it's just a popular instrument. People just love it. It's very sexy.
Well, we've heard a little sax, we've heard a little piano, and we're going to go out with Peter White, who is a jazz guitarist who'll be playing as well at the festival. This opens when? Friday night at
7 p.m.
And it goes into the evening Friday and then picks up again on Saturday at what time?
7 p.m.
How do people find out about where to go and how to get tickets?
They can visit the website UptownCharlotteJazzFest.com, or they can visit the Music Factory, the Fillmore box office, and tickets are sold there as well.
Okay. Well, good luck with this.
Thank you so much. We're excited.
You're very welcome. Nice to have you with us. We'll go out a little music here of Peter White, and thanks to Tammy Green.